Today is November 3rd, 2007, and this is the Apple Weekly Report, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, morning editor for TMO.
And I am Brian Chaffin, editor-in-chief. To get the full story on anything we covered in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/roundup. And if you'd like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at awr@macobserver.com. And that does include, of course, sending us any recorded comments that you might have.
Yes, it does. And Brian, I have to just jump right in and say you sound like you're feeling a lot better this week.
I am feeling a little bit better, by which I mean that I'm feeling a little bit less like death.
Well, there you go. And I've learned over the years, take it as you can get it.
Indeed. You know, I was able to get out and finally pick up a copy of Leopard yesterday. I haven't been able to install it, but at least I got it.
Hey, you know, that's a big step forward for you, especially considering how sick you've been.
Yep, indeed, indeed, and thanks. You know, before we get onto the news, we ought to mention our promotion that we're doing for Macworld.
Right, right, Hotel Milano.
Yeah, you know, I like how we managed to make that sound like we're actually really winging it. we're getting really good at that. We're almost like pros and stuff.
It's our special way.
Yeah, wait a minute. Do pros actually mention it, though? That they're pros? No. Yeah, all right.
Yes, because if we're pros and we just mentioned it, then yes.
That must make us pros. All right, so seriously, folks, so the Hotel Milano, we are doing a promotion with them for Macworld. It's a deal that is get you an extra discount off of the discount that you can get through booking a room for Macworld through IDG, the folks that actually put on Macworld.
Right. And Brian, you know, what a trooper. You actually had to go and check out several hotels to pick out the one that you thought would be best for us and all of our devoted listeners and readers.
Yep. Yep. We won't belabor the point since we've talked about it in the last couple of shows, but the bottom line is that it's a very nice hotel. Rooms are very comfortable. I definitely liked it. It's $154 a night. That's $5 cheaper than you can get it through IDG. And remember, that price through IDG is already a discounted price. So if you're going to go to Macworld and you want a nice hotel and you want to be close to the Moscone Center, this is definitely a good choice for you. You can get details at a link that will be in the show notes.
Yes, and it also has the added bonus. You'll be able to potentially run into us in the halls.
Yes, lucky you.
Oh my!
And there's the good Wi-Fi signal too. That was one of the things that I tested out. So check that out through the show notes. And with that, let's get on to the news. Been a busy week.
It has been a busy week. Leopard sales are off to a big start. Apple snuck out new MacBook laptops, and NBC blamed Apple for ruining music pricing. A new Trojan horse for the Mac surfaced. Apple was hit with yet another patent lawsuit. PC World says the MacBook Pro is the fastest Vista laptop ever. And the iPhone is Time's invention of the year. A new iPhone and iPod Touch software hack surfaced. Apple's new chief counsel scored a $24 million stock grant. And as a special bonus, we have Ted Lando joining us today in the Context Machine.
Yeah, that'll be great. And speaking of great, macOS 10.5 or Leopard does indeed seem to be off to a fast start. Apple announced on Tuesday that it sold over 2 million copies of the latest version of macOS 10 in the first weekend that it was available. Initial sales figures for Leopard show that the new OS outpaced macOS 10.4, or Tiger, that operating system's opening weekend sales, making it the most successful OS launch in Apple's history. The sales figures include copies sold at Apple retail stores, Apple authorized resellers, the online Apple store, units moved under maintenance agreements, and those bundled with new computers. Leopard was released on Friday, October 26, after a delay of several months. Customers lined up outside Apple's retail stores, in some cases for hours in advance, to get copies as soon as they were available.
And Apple snuck a quiet MacBook upgrade out on Wednesday. The updated models sport either a 2 or 2.2 gigahertz Intel Core 2 dual processor and the Intel GMAX3100 graphics processor. Both are part of Intel's Santa Rosa chipset. The new MacBooks also include an 800 MHz FrontSight bus, a gigabyte of RAM with support for up to 4 gigabytes, and hard drive options that range from 80 gigabytes on up to 250 gig. That's a first for the MacBook line. Prices start at $1,000.99. No, they don't. They start at $1,099.00. Check the show notes for a link to the Apple Store to buy through the TMO affiliate program.
NBC Universal CEO Jeff Zucker is pointing the finger at Apple and the iTunes Store as the reason media companies can't sell their wares online at what he considers to be profitable rates. Now, I'm telling you, folks, I'm really holding it in to wait to the context machine. So I'm showing discipline here. His comments came during a speech at the Syracuse Newhouse School of Communications, where he also urged media companies to take a stand against Apple. Mr. Zucker said, quote, "We know that Apple has destroyed the music business in terms of pricing, and if we don't take control, they'll do the same thing on the video side," end quote. Mr. Zucker's comments followed a very public feud between Apple and NBC over pricing at the iTunes Store. NBC claimed it wanted more flexible pricing for TV shows, while Apple claimed that NBC wanted to charge too much for programming. Ultimately, the two companies parted ways when NBC refused to renew its contract with the iTunes Store, and Apple immediately dumped existing NBC programming. Mr. Zucker added that he urged Apple CEO Steve Jobs to price one TV show, just one TV show on the iTunes Store at $2.99 instead of the standard $1.99 per episode as a quote-unquote experiment. He said that Mr. Jobs refused and also would not entertain the idea of sharing iPod sales revenue with the broadcaster. In an effort to bolster sagging revenues, NBC has decided to team up with News Corp to launch its own online video service dubbed Hulu. Unlike the iTunes Store, Hulu will be web browser-based and shows will include commercials that viewers must watch. Hulu is available now, but is still in beta testing. If analysts' predictions are any indications, it will shut down within a year, and NBC's content will return to the iTunes Store. Now, there's one more quote, I think, that Mr. Zucker said, where he said that Apple has been selling millions of iPods on the backs of his programming.
I think you're right. I believe he did say that. And computer security company Intego has discovered a Trojan horse application dubbed OSX.RSPlug.A that targets Mac OS X. The Trojan horse has been appearing on some pornography websites as a new QuickTime codec. Now, a Trojan horse is an application that appears to be legit but performs some other form of malicious act when it's actually run. And in this case, victims find the application by clicking on what appears to be a thumbnail image of a movie. Next, they see a dialog that offers to download a new QuickTime codec. If users download and double-click the installer disk image icon, then enter their administrator name and password, their internet DNS settings are changed to redirect them to phishing sites and pornography sites. The Trojan horse also adds a cron tab entry that checks and resets the DNS entries every minute, just in case someone tries to manually change the numbers themselves. OSX.RSPlug.A is not like a virus that can move from computer to computer. Instead, it requires users to intentionally install it. And for now, this exploit appears to be limited to the subset,
otherwise known as the majority,
of web surfers that visit pornography websites. But that doesn't mean it won't be adapted for other sites as well. OSX.RSPlug.A takes advantage of the trusting nature many web surfers have and could just as easily appear on sites that offer what would otherwise seem to be legit TV show and movie downloads or even family home videos.
So just be careful about what you download and when you enter your administrator password.
That's right.
The Ottawa, Canada-based company Wylan filed a lawsuit against Apple and 21 other companies for infringement over patents it owns relating to Wi-Fi and power consumption in DSL products. Wylan claimed that along with Apple, Belkin, Dell, Hewlett-Packard, Intel, and Sony, that several other companies have been using its patent-protected technology without proper licensing. Jim Skippen, Wylan's president and CEO, commented that his company has negotiated patent licensing deals with many companies already and added, quote, While we prefer to resolve patent infringement through business discussions, we have consistently maintained that litigation was always a possibility when negotiations do not result in a license within a reasonable time, end quote. Mr. Skippin's company has an added incentive to strike patent deals with companies, either at the negotiation table or in court, because Wyland makes its money by licensing intellectual property and not by actually doing anything. While Wyland seems more than happy to talk about the pending litigation, Apple is following its standard policy and is not commenting on the case.
PC World put a wide range of laptops through the ringer in 2007 and found the model that ran Microsoft's Windows Vista operating system the fastest was Apple's MacBook Pro. The MacBook Pro beat out offerings from several PC makers, including Dell, Toshiba, and Alienware. PC World's The Most Notable Notebooks of 2007 report said, quote, "The fastest Windows Vista notebook we've tested this year is a Mac." Try that again. The fastest Windows Vista notebook we've tested this year, or for that matter ever, is a Mac, end quote. Apple's pro-level laptop beat out the elegantly named Gateway E-265M by only 1 point, with an overall score of 88 in PC World's WorldBench tests. The report added, quote, "The MacBook score is far more impressive simply because Apple couldn't care less whether you run Windows," end quote. The bottom line, it looks like the best platform for running Windows is a Mac, and as a bonus, it runs Mac OS X as well.
What do you get when you mix equal parts of multi-touch technology, innovative design, the ability to tell cell carriers how a mobile phone should be made, and stick it all in your pocket? The iPhone, Time Magazine's invention of the year. Time stated, quote, "Yes, there's been a lot of hype written about the iPhone and a lot of guff too, so much so it seems weird to add more after Danny Fanboy and Bobby McBlogger have had their day. When that day is over, Apple's iPhone is still the best thing invented this year," end quote. According to the article, Apple managed to design a handheld device that blends form and functionality in a way that is approachable and user-friendly in a world where other companies design phones and other electronic devices based on packing features into nondescript cases. The iPhone stands out. Even gadget lovers that don't use the iPhone will ultimately see benefits from the combination iPod and smartphone now that Apple has set a new bar for handheld devices and also shown that product developers can take some design control back from the cell carriers. Other companies like Nokia, Motorola, and Samsung have new incentive to continue developing innovative products as well.
Apple spokesman Natalie Karas confirmed this week that Apple has changed its iPhone sales policy and is limiting customers to purchasing no more than two of the popular smartphones. She said, quote, "Customer response to the iPhone has been off the charts, and limiting iPhone sales to two per customer helps us ensure that there are enough iPhones for people who are shopping for themselves or buying a gift," end quote. Ms. Karas added that Apple is also requiring customers to use a credit card or debit card to buy their iPhones to help discourage unauthorized resellers from making bulk purchases. Now, on first glance, it would appear that Apple is violating U.S. laws by refusing to take cash as payment for an iPhone, but it turns out the company is well within its rights. While cash must be accepted for debts and government-related charges like taxes, private businesses are not bound by the same requirements. This exclusion is also what allows convenience stores to refuse to take anything larger than a $20 bill or buses to refuse pennies for bus fares.
If February is just too darn long to wait for official third-party iPhone and iPod Touch applications, jailbreakme.com can help fill your hacker needs today. A group of iPhone coders has developed a one-touch jailbreak method for both of Apple's handheld devices that works directly from mobile Safari. Jailbreaking is a process that hacks the iPhone or iPod Touch so that extra applications can be added to the devices. The procedure that the jailbreakme.com team devised doesn't require users to download installer applications to their computer, enter cryptic command line codes, or do anything other than confirm they want to jailbreak their iPhone or iPod Touch after visiting the jailbreakme.com website. AppSnap is installed as part of the process, so users can then add additional apps directly to their handheld whenever they are connected to a wireless network with internet access. Jailbreakme.com is free to use, is compatible with iPhone software 1.1.1, and also patches a potential security flaw involving maliciously crafted TIFF images. Keep in mind that Apple does not support jailbreaking the iPhone or iPod Touch, so use this hack at your own risk. And Jeff, I think you mentioned to me that it also actually patches the very method that they use to make this happen.
It does, which for me was actually a really great thing to hear, because that potential hack using maliciously crafted TIFF images could allow someone to do far nastier things to your iPhone than allowing you to install new applications.
Good to know.
Good to know. Okay, and finally this week, Apple General Counsel Daniel Cooperman received a grant of 133,000 restricted stock shares valued at an estimated $24.9 million. Apple filed the required regulatory paperwork for Mr. Cooperman's stock grant on Thursday. Mr. Cooperman came on board at Apple on November 1st. He was selected in September 2007 to replace Donald J. Rosenberg as Senior Vice President, General Counsel, and Secretary. Prior to joining the Cupertino company, he served as Oracle's Senior Vice President, General Counsel, and Secretary. Mr. Cooperman won't be able to cash in on his newfound nest egg right away, however, because the stock is set to vest over a four-year period.
And that sound means it's time for the Context Machine, time when Jeff and I delve into the topics of this week's news a little more deeply, and as mentioned at the top of the show, we've got Ted Landau joining us to talk about Leopard. Hey, Ted.
Well, hi. Welcome. How are you?
Ted, of course, is the founder of MacFixit and the author of Ted Landau's User-Friendly View, the author of many books. You're working on a book right now, aren't you, Ted?
Yes, I'm working on a Take Control book. That's Adam Ank's Take Control e-book series. It's going to be called Take Control of Troubleshooting Your iPhone or Take Control of Your iPhone. We're not quite sure which title we're going to go with, because it does go into more than just troubleshooting.
When's that coming out?
Should be out December. Early January, the latest.
Outstanding.
Cool. And so if people want to keep up on when that's out, they can go to tidbits.com or takecontrol.com, right?
Takecontrolbooks.com, I think.
Takecontrolbooks.com. Okay.
Right.
And we will, of course, be mentioning that at iPod Observer when it comes out.
Well, thanks.
Of course.
That's how we are.
Since Leopard is the hot topic, and again, let's talk about Leopard, since the Leopard's the hot topic. And Ted, how many iOS 10 and the macOS have you seen and covered as a journalist now?
Well, stop a second. You were cutting in and out, and so I'm going to have trouble even hearing your questions. But if I understood the question, you were asking me how many versions of macOS 10 have I been through already? Is that
covered as a journalist, including the original macOS?
Well, I got my first Mac in 1984, so I go back all the way to version 1.0 of the operating system, but I wasn't doing journalistic work then. I think I started writing about the Mac around 1988, so I think we're probably running version system 6 around the time of the original macOS at the time that I started writing.
That sounds about
quite
right.
A few. Yeah.
Are you bored yet?
No. It's always exciting. The new version operating system is always fun. And we were talking about the iPhone briefly. I mean, I don't want to get off the Leopard topic too much here, but I find the iPhone was really exciting because it was like starting over with the version 1.0. It reminded me of my excitement with the original Macintosh back in '84, an entirely new platform that had a lot of possibilities yet to come. So yeah, it's all very exciting. I don't think it'll ever get boring.
Well, good. Well, let's talk about Leopard. What are you thinking?
I've worked with Leopard for a while because I'm a developer and had access to a beta copy. Though I must say, I don't really start working with it very hard until it comes out, because unless I was working on a book, which this time I wasn't, I find I don't like working on something and then finding out that the last minute Apple changes it, and so I was wasting my time. But I'm running Leopard now on two machines, and I like it a lot. It it adds, you know, a number of new features that I find useful. It adds some things that I'm not crazy about. It probably is a little bit more buggy than I think Tiger was when it first came out. But that said, I'm using it on both my everyday machines and having very little trouble.
Now, when I did my installation of Leopard, I went ahead and did what Apple says, which is do an upgrade, because I wanted to see what people were going to come up against. Brian and I later agreed that we thought that an archive and install might be a better way to go. What do you think?
Well, I think for Leopard, an archive install is certainly safer. I wound up doing both. I have two machines, like I said, that I've upgraded. One was my laptop. I did the standard upgrade on that and had absolutely no problems. And I think many people that will be true for, maybe even the majority of people. On my desktop Mac, I have a PowerMac G5. I did the archive and install. And part of the reason I did it was I had a lot of problems right away. I did something that I would certainly recommend that everybody do before they upgrade anyway, which was to run disk utility and make sure that I wasn't having any problems with the disk, because you don't want to upgrade to a new version of the OS if your disk needs repairs. So I ran Disk Utility, and it said that my disk needed repairs and that Disk Utility was incapable of fixing it. That wasn't.
Well, that's reassuring.
Yeah. So I said, uh-oh, now is not the time for me to upgrade to Leopard. And so then I wound up getting a Disk Warrior, excellent utility from Alsoft that often can fix problems when Disk Utility can't. And I had a little problem getting Disk Warrior to run. I finally did that. It repaired, claimed anyway to repair the drive. Disk First Aid now said everything was fine. So I decided, okay, I'm going to install Leopard, but I'm still a little nervous. I went with the archive and install. And that went fine too, but the downside of the archive and install compared to the upgrade is that certain things that were working fine before you upgrade, it may not be working after you upgrade, and not because it's incompatible, but just because all the proper software in its various locations doesn't always get transferred. So you might find, for instance, that you have to re-enter a password where in Tiger you knew you already had the password entered, or it might say that some component of some program is missing and you might not immediately know where that component is, and it turns out that it was left over in the old archive that you have now in that previous system folder, and you have to know where to look for it and transfer it over. And so it's not a big deal for me, you know, because I've done this many times now and I'm pretty familiar with it, but a novice user that's trying an archive and install for the first time because they're worried about these reports may have some difficulties like that, but those are minor compared to, you know, having your hard drive crash on restart or something like that, which is what could happen if you don't do an archive and install and you do run into some of these problems that people have reported.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. Well, why to upgrade?
I missed the question, sorry. You have to say the question again.
And hopefully I won't chop out. Why should anyone want to upgrade?
To upgrade to Leopard from Tiger?
Yeah. Could you give us a spiel?
I'd say two things. It isn't absolutely essential, in my view, that you upgrade from Tiger to Leopard. Leopard is probably, in my view, the least essential upgrade since Mac OS X came out. Now, Tiger is a great version of Mac OS X, and I think part of what we're seeing is a sort of law of diminishing returns here. As each version of Mac OS X gets significantly better than the previous version, you begin to sort of flatten out, asymptote, whatever term you want to use, and it becomes that much harder for the next version to make a quantum leap ahead. And that's what you're seeing here in Leopard. There are definitely new programs like Time Machine that allows you to back up your software efficiently, and then there's Spaces, which allows you to have virtual desktops, so you can switch from, you know, you can have your email window in one desktop and your browser in another desktop, and you can switch back and forth so you don't have to have overlapping windows if you have a small display in particular. But the truth truth is that a lot of those features, you know, were doable often via third-party software in Tiger. And you know, you'd be hard-pressed to say just by looking at Tiger in a short tour once you've upgraded, things that you say, boy, you know, I couldn't do without this. I absolutely need Leopard to get this. On the other hand, the two pluses, I'd say, is one, there's a lot of under-the-hood stuff going on in Leopard, and the true value of that you won't really be able to know, for most people anyway, until third-party developers start coming out with software that take advantage of these new features that then this software wouldn't have been able to exist until Leopard came out. So when you start seeing, you know, software versions that come out and it says, you know, this only runs under Leopard, because it wouldn't have been compatible with Tiger, well, you know, whatever new features that version introduces, then you can thank Apple for coming out with Leopard, or they never would have been able to do that. And all of that said, yeah, there are some neat features in Leopard, even though if they're not essential, that I'm happy to have. One of them, which I've already talked about elsewhere, is screen sharing. It allows you very easily to load up somebody else's screen on your Mac and see it and control it. It works beautifully, especially from iChat. I mean, there's different ways to do it. Well, one way to do it is from iChat, and you can just, you know, if somebody has an iChat account that on your buddy list, you can just select a screen share, and you can see their screen on your Mac. If you're trying to do troubleshooting, which is something that I often do, it's really wonderful because, you know, if you're dealing with, you know, the stereotype, you know, my mother doesn't really understand computers and she just got one to get email and she doesn't know a lot about what's going on. But when things go wrong, it's going to be hard to explain to that type of person all the troubleshooting that you're going to want to do. And it'd be just easier. Sometimes I'm on the phone and I just want to be able to say, you know, I just want to do it myself. I get this done in 30 seconds. If I was sitting there in front of your Mac, it's going to take me 45 minutes because we're doing this over the phone. It's very frustrating. Well, with screen sharing, you can eliminate that.
You know, the screen sharing feature, I totally agree with you. It's, for me, it's going to be one of the most wonderful things because now when I have family members that call me and say, oh, my God, Jeff, what do I do? Instead of spending that 45 minutes, I can be in their computer and out in a minute, and it's done. But you also keyed on something a couple minutes ago that I thought was a really great point, which is that the under-the-hood changes to Leopard are part of what's really important about this update. And I was wondering, what do you think some of these under-the-hood changes are going to do for applications that people are recoding to take advantage of Leopard?
Well, I'm not, to be honest with you, I'm not all that sure what we're going to see yet. I mean, it's something I guess I'd rather not speculate on at this point because there are some new graphics capabilities that are there that will allow you different applications to do things that they couldn't do before. There are some underlying structures to how the directory works that will allow server-related software to do things that it couldn't do before. There's one of the things actually getting to screen sharing that exists that we'll see is that there's a new wide area bonjour is what they're calling it, but essentially means that you'll be able to connect to other computers remotely without having to know their IP address. You just know a name and be able to do it similar to the way Bonjour works between two Macs locally now. And so that's a new thing that's been added to Leopard. So there are things like that, but really, you know, exactly how wonderful things will be when all this third-party software comes out, I'm really not sure. I'm waiting to see it like everybody else.
Cool. So what do you think the top three features in Leopard are?
Well, the biggest feature of that Apple touts, of course, is Time Machine, and it is, you know, I've used it. It's a very good way of backing up your material. It's not perfect by any means. I don't think I'm going to wind up using it actually as my primary backup tool. It doesn't allow for one thing, for instance, it doesn't allow for a bootable backup, which I think is important. You know, if your primary hard drive breaks, doesn't start up anymore, and you want to restore it from your backup, you still need a way to start up your Mac in order to accomplish that restore. And it's nice if you could actually start up from the backup drive to do that.
That's a good point.
But Time Machine doesn't allow you to do that. And it there's some other things about it that I find limiting. But for most people who aren't backing up at all, it's a great way to at least start to get into backing up. And it's probably going to do a boon business for the companies that sell hard drives, because suddenly, you know, people are going to discover to use Time Machine, you want to get a hard drive that's bigger than the hard drive that's inside your Mac, so that it can store your entire Mac contents plus have incremental updates over you know, many days. And so 500 gigabyte hard drives are going to be a popular item, I think, as people start upgrading to Leopard.
Right.
After that, one of the things that I'm not going to go with what I, you know, I'm not going to tell you what I think Apple would consider to be the top three aside from Time Machine. I'm going to tell you some of the things that I was particularly interested in. One of the things that I really liked was the way Apple changed its printing software. One of the things that I have hated about Apple's printing software from almost back to well before Mac OS X existed was the dividing between page setup and print. You would go to print something, and you know, if you wanted to change the orientation, if you suddenly discovered, oh, gee, I want landscape orientation instead of portrait, you have to exit print, go into page setup, change the orientation, go back to the print dialog, and then if you have more than one printer, it gets even more confusing than that. Well, Apple has totally revamped the printing software. There is no page setup dialog anymore. Everything is handled from the single print command. The print command now gives you a print preview where you can actually see an image of what you're going to print right in the print dialog. You don't have to even do the PDF version of printing to get it. They've eliminated printer utility to further makes things simpler, and that's being handled by those functions are being handled by the print and fax system preferences pane now, which has been expanded to have printer utility features and a few other new things. And so, really, they've simplified, consolidated, and improved the whole printing experience. I think it's one of the biggest boons for me personally in Leopard.
You know, I've been pleasantly surprised with the new printing in Leopard as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really good. Beyond that, I like the changes that have been made to sharing in general. The whole sharing system preferences pane has been simplified, unified. As we already started to talk about, there's this new screen sharing feature. Now, there's another way to get screen sharing in Mac OS X that doesn't depend upon iChat. You can do it directly by starting at the Finder and just clicking on a screen share button that appears when you attempt to connect to a remote or locally connected computer. And you again get screen sharing software through an entirely different program. There's actually a program
nice.
on your Mac called screen sharing, and it works differently. It's totally independent of the iChat method, but it works quite well as well. Sometimes it works too well, actually. I mean, one of the things that I discovered, and this gets to yet another thing while I'm on the subject of screen sharing, and that is that there's a new feature called Back to My Mac that's supported by Leopard. And what it does essentially is if you have a .Mac account, plugging for Apple there. They want you to spend $99 a year to subscribe to .Mac. But if you have a .Mac account, you can log into your .Mac account from more than one computer. So if you have a laptop, you can log into your .Mac account from there. If you have a desktop Mac, log in at the same time. And with Back to My Mac enabled on both computers that are both logged in to your .Mac account, you can connect from one computer to the other for file sharing or screen sharing by just locating the name of the other computer in a little sidebar that appears in a Finder window.
That's a cool thing.
Yeah, it works even remotely. In other words, if you're at a hotel in Hawaii and your desktop Mac is on and running and back in Pennsylvania, you can connect to your desktop Mac at home from Hawaii almost as if it was in the next room and you had a local Ethernet connection. It works amazingly well if it's working. The problem is that it doesn't often work for remote connections for a variety of reasons. Apple has acknowledged that this is a problem. And the other problem I had is that when I tried it for local connections, I couldn't turn it off. once you've made this .Mac connection, it says that you can say turn off Back to My Mac There's a system preferences option in the .Mac system preferences pane. And you, if you click to stop it, it stops and says it won't work anymore, except when I clicked to stop it, it still worked. And I stopped it from the other machine, and it still didn't work. I logged out of my .Mac account on both computers, and it still worked.
That seems to be a problem.
Yeah, it's not supposed to work that way. It turns out there is a way to stop it, and it gets into Apple has a knowledge-based document in which they talk about how this whole thing is working through something called Kerberos. I forget even how to pronounce it correctly, but K-E-R-B-E-R-O-S. And there's a Kerberos ticket that you can access from keychain access. And if you delete this ticket, then you finally have turned off this back to my Mac option. But you're not supposed to have to do that. That isn't the way Apple intended it to work.
Is a fix coming, do you think?
Oh, yeah, I'm sure this is something that they're aware of and will be fixing in the forthcoming update. But it was kind of frustrating because I'm thinking, you know, I don't want this to work now. Well, you know, this means that, and it also means in general you have to be really careful who you give your .Mac name and password to. Now, if you said, well, I want to try out the screen sharing, so I'm just going to give you my name and password, and you know, we'll see if I can share your screen. And once they have your name and password, if you don't change it, they could potentially be able to, you know, access you through screen sharing without needing your permission. Because when it does work, I guess I should make that clear, when it's part of the advantage of the way it works is you click on the back to your Mac connected computer, you could say share screen, and it connects you without asking the other computer for its permission, without requiring that you enter a name or a password or anything. It just says, oh yeah, you're a .Mac user, you're okay, connect. And so once you have that set up that way, this other person who has your name and password could just connect to your computer without you even being aware that it's happening.
And for the record, kiddies, we don't recommend giving your password to anyone.
Yeah, so you want to be careful there. Yeah.
All right. Well, I'm going to stop talking.
Okay. All right. How about if I try and say, Ted, we know that your time is incredibly valuable, and thank you for sharing so much of it with us today.
Oh, sure. My pleasure. And I'll just add, and I know we're going to be going, but there are a lot of other little things that we could talk about that are there. I wouldn't call them the most important features in Leopard, but I'll just name two or three, and we'll maybe talk about some other time. TextEdit has an auto-saving feature that's kind of nice. You can repartition drives without erasing them in Disk Utility now. You can disconnect one partition of a multiple partition hard drive without having to disconnect all of them at once, which is what you had to do in Tiger. There are just a lot of little subtle improvements like that that make Leopard a more pleasant experience. So there are those type of things as well.
You know, you write a fantastic column for the Mac Observer. I think these would be great things to cover and let all of our readers know about.
Well, I probably will do that. Thanks for the suggestion, Jeff.
Oh, sure. That was just a very friendly, gentle arm twist.
No arm twisting necessary. I'll be happy to do it.
Excellent. So, well, thanks. You very much.
Well, you're welcome. It was fun doing it, and maybe we'll do it again sometime.
Right, great.
Great.
Okay, bye.
Well, it was nice to have Ted on the show this week. That guy knows a lot about the Mac.
He certainly does.
You know, it's funny. He also knows quite a bit about the iPhone and hacking the iPhone. And, you know, as of course you know, Jeff, we were kind of cooking up a series idea for him to do over at iPod Observer. So hopefully we'll be able to announce something soon on that.
I'm looking forward to it. Really?
Yeah, that'd be pretty cool if we can actually make that happen.
Yeah.
And hopefully next week Bob Levitis is going to join us to talk more about Leopard. So it'll be a good show next week too.
It will. I'm looking forward to that as well.
I mean, I think any show really where listeners get to listen to
more than us,
not us. Yeah, yeah, that's a real boon to them because you know otherwise they're just kind of stuck with us.
That's true, and in some way, well, see, we're like family. They can't get rid of us.
Yeah, that horrible uncle that you know no one really likes and kind of embarrasses everybody. That's us.
Sad but true.
All right. Well, let's talk about another thing from the context machine, and that's the Mr. Zucker.
You know, there is no way we could not have this in the context machine, especially after the incredible superhuman restraint you showed as you told everyone during the news section about Mr. Zucker and his comments. So, Brian, I'm going to lean back for a second so you can purge your body of everything that you wanted to say then.
What a dumbass. How do people like this run these companies? You know, what is the big media guys? I mean, how can they just be consistently so freaking stupid? That's
you know,
my question.
Behind every really, really stupid CEO like that, there is a mother saying, "It's okay, honey. You're fine. You know what you're doing. Just tell everyone about it." And I'm sure that's probably exactly how they sound.
Yeah, I'm sure.
I mean, there has to be someone in the background saying, "No, really, what you're saying is really good." And then they turn to someone else and go, "This guy's a fracking idiot."
Yeah. I mean, first of all, I'll say again that I really think that TV shows should have been introduced at $2.99 to begin with.
You know, had they been introduced at that higher price, I think they probably still would have sold really well just because there wasn't a precedent set at $1.99.
No, there wasn't a precedent. I think that people would have been snapping them up. I mean, they certainly wouldn't have. Well, my opinion is that they wouldn't have sold, 50% fewer.
No
units. So they would have made more money. The networks would have been, the studios and the networks. Everyone would have been a lot happier, I think, with that pricing. And of course, now that said, I also have very little doubt that if the pricing had been set at $2.99, that NBC or some other company would have been going, "Well, we just want to try an experiment where one is $3.99."
Oh yeah, absolutely. And you know, if they didn't like the $1.99 in the beginning, why did they sign on?
True enough. Exactly. And this notion that Apple has ruined the business, what's the exact quote? Destroyed the music business. You know,
yeah, I believe they destroyed the music business.
In terms of pricing, he did stipulate that. But, I mean, my problem with that is that it is how can anyone objectively look at the music business and at what was happening to the music business and what they've been doing to themselves and how utterly they had failed to sell any music online. How can they divorce that from the fact that the business model is the model that works? I mean, he's approaching this like Apple, that the iTunes store would have been a success had companies been charging $1.99 a song or $1.49 a song or charging, you know, it's this never, never land that these idiots live in where they get to do business in the way that makes sense for them instead of having to match what the market wants.
You know, that's actually a really bad business plan.
If you don't
react to your market, and if you don't provide a product at a quality level and a price point that your customers want, they will go somewhere else. And that it's obvious. If you look at what music sales have been over the past few years, the recording industry by and large is not offering customers what they really want at
the
price they want.
They have reduced the number of acts that they release. They have raised prices. That's what they were doing in the years leading up to Napster and the years following Napster. They raised prices and they reduced the amount of material that they were releasing, and everything that was released was homogenized crap.
And we can see how well that's been working out for them.
Right. That is what has happened to the CD sales. Okay, the piracy and all these other issues going on with file sharing, while they are a problem in some ways, they are not the root cause of the music industry seeing its sales go down. It's their own inept running of their businesses that has caused this problem. You know, and Apple saved the music business by actually demonstrating how music should be sold online. And by demonstrating it, they actually proved that music will sell online if you sell it at a reasonable price. They've shown this. They've demonstrated this. You know, I'm the last person. I will give you a list a mile long of things that I hate about Apple. But when it comes to the iTunes Store, the darn thing is a success, and you cannot divorce that success from the business model that it uses to achieve that success.
That's very true. Yeah, that's absolutely very true.
And that business model is consistent pricing, 99 cents a single. Now, again, as everyone knows who's listened to us long enough, you know, I still think that that is too expensive. I really think that digital music needs to be sold cheaper. That aside,
you know, yes, it would be nice to see music at the iTunes Store sold at a lower price. And we may eventually see that. Who knows? In the meantime, we have seen a step in the right direction, which is the reduction in price of iTunes Plus tracks from $1.29 to 99 cents.
Yeah, that's
definitely
good,
step in the right
stuff. Yeah, higher quality, no DRM. 99 cents, man. That's good stuff. So, in the meanwhile, Zucker's a tool. Zucker's a tool, and their whole notion of wanting a piece of the iPod sales. I mean, oh my God, are you kidding me? Are you freaking kidding me? Who was it? I think it was someone at Wired or was it someone at CNET that pointed out? You know, when's the last time Sony gave NBC a cut of their TV sales?
You know, off the top of my head, I'm going to say never.
Yeah, and you know, Microsoft, of course, already went down this path by giving it's a buck to the music I don't know which arm of the music industry it is, but
I think they signed a deal with Universal, but I'm not completely sure.
They're basically getting a buck per tune, but of course,
right? So Universal got $15.
And that is a ridiculous business model, and I'm completely against that. Of course, now that said, I'm going to play devil's advocate against myself. I think that Apple has set its own precedent by demanding part of the carrier's monthly revenues from the iPhone. That to me is very analogous to the media companies wanting a piece of the iPod sales. I think it's a very analogous situation. So I don't know. We'll see where it goes, but I think Zucker's a tool, and I think that most of the big media people just have no idea what they're doing, and they're destroying themselves.
You know, I think you totally hit it on the head there, and it just amazes me that these companies simply can't clear their eyes and see what's going on. I just don't get that.
Yeah, and Hulu should be renamed Who Cares? Yeah, really. I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm all for a free download with commercials. That's great to me. I mean, I believe in advertising. You know, folks, advertising is what pays for the Mac Observer. You block our advertising, and if enough people block our advertising, we will have to go out of business because we won't be able to pay the people that write the content. That's all there is to it. You know, our servers cost money, our content costs money, the design costs money. Everything that we do costs money. That is paid for by advertising.
Right.
Okay. No advertising, no content. The same goes with piracy and with TV shows. You know, if enough people steal the stuff without paying for it in one way or another, you're going to lose the content. That's all there is to it. So I'm fine with the free download that comes with commercials, but a free download that comes with a commercial that I have to watch on my browser, go frack yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. The whole setup that Hulu has, it just goes back to exactly the very problem that the recording industry is having just in general. They're not getting how people want to have their content. And making someone watch a show in a browser, that's not going to fly. I know there's people out there that are going to go, oh, I don't care, it's fine by me. But by and large, I would venture to say that the majority of people would prefer to be able to watch a television show, maybe say, oh, on their TV.
Yeah, exactly, on the TV or their iPod.
Right, and not having to sit at their computer.
Yep, not at all. Again, you're right. Some people, that's going to be just fine. There's probably a lot of people even that'll be just fine with watching a TV show on their computer screen. But
sure,
the majority of folks want to watch their TV on their TV. I mean, you know, right. Duh.
That just kind of makes sense.
The fact that you can't get the Hulu, right, if I remember correctly, you can't get the program. You can only get it for a limited time, and
it's
it goes
limited
away
time.
After a while.
Right. And the commercials that are included with the programming, from what I understand, you cannot skip the commercials.
Again, I don't have too much of a problem with that. Not too much of a problem. I don't know. We can talk about that another time because we're already running over. But, I mean,
right.
You know, again, the advertising is what pays for this stuff.
Right.
And,
so,
and
yeah.
You know, putting together a TV show costs a lot of money. I'm not against NBC making money by any means. I'm just against them trying to pretend that they can have a business model that doesn't work for me just because they think that it works for them. It's just this guy...
You know, if the business model doesn't work for you, and when I say you, I'm expanding that beyond you, Brian, to all consumers.
Yes, the greater me.
The greater Brian. So if it doesn't work for you and all of the minions that you have, then why does the recording industry think that it will work? Because the consumer ultimately...
Or the TV industry. It's the same thing.
Right, right. So, you know, if the consumer is saying, no, this doesn't work, and then the whatever industry it is says, no, it does work, well, no, the industry's wrong, and they need to change.
Yeah, it's
the
like
customer dictates how it works.
Music station. You know, the great answer to the iPhone in Europe is music station. It's another
right.
bloody rental service for renting music on your phone. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? I don't want to rent music at all. I don't want to rent music on my phone. A separate rental service is going to cost €3.99 €3.99 a week.
Music station service is £1.99 a week, which is $4 and something US.
It's €3 though. You said
okay.
£1.99, so I think it's €3.99. At least that's what it was introduced at, and I know that it launched this week. I didn't write that story, but the point is I mean, you know, renting music that's separate from the music that I've got on my computer. Just these people, they're idiots. They're just all a bunch of idiots.
I love the spin that the music rental companies or subscription services use, which is you're not limited just to the music that you already have. You can have access to everything. And whenever I hear that, in whatever form they put it in, I have this flashback to the 70s. Do you remember the magician Doug Henning?
Of course.
And he'd finish a trick or an illusion, and he'd go, "It's magic," and he'd have this big flourish of his arms that I just did. But since it's an audio podcast, no one got to see it. But that's exactly what I see whenever these different subscription services explain to people in their special spin why it's so much better to not own your music.
Yeah, yeah. And really, I mean, music subscriptions are better for the subscription services.
Yeah, okay, you know, there you go.
They get a revenue stream that they don't really have to worry about earning. And that's, you know, recurring revenue. That's what the subscription services are all about, the labels, the copyright holders, and the service itself getting recurring revenue that, you know, that they don't need to worry about. That's the magic. That's the dream. And that's kind of part of what's at the root of why so many rental services have come out. It's because it's the dream of the media holders. It's not the
right.
dream of us, the users, and they don't get that.
Right.
They just don't. They don't get that. They're living in a myopic world, and they're, you know, they think, gosh, wouldn't it be great to be able to get recurring revenue, and, you know, without actually then saying, you know, and it's too bad that no one actually wants to give us that.
You know, I also think it would be great to be able to fly and shoot laser beams from my eyes, but that's not going to happen either.
That would, in fact, be great. And you know, and don't get me wrong, I know that there are some people that like renting their music, and I am happy that there are options out there for those folks. It's good for the marketplace for that option to exist.
Sure, it is, because it does give people choice.
Yeah, and you know, Napster has several hundred thousand subscribers, and you know, more power to them. It's just the obviously, the vast majority of people prefer to keep buying their music.
Right, and you know, I'm in that vast majority. I have no interest in renting my music.
Yeah, and I don't want to rent my TV shows either. And if I got a TV show, I want to be able to download it and watch it when I want it. You know, and quite frankly, right. I'm just going to put it on my TiVo in the first place, so Hulu can go brackets off.
They can go Hulu off.
Yes. Who cares? Who cares? All right. That's
Zucker
it. Let's
man,
get us
it.
Out of here.
Okay. And that's this week's Apple Weekly Report. Thanks for listening, and thanks for sending us your comments and feedback.
Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer and iPodObserver.com. Our bandwidth is provided by CashFly. The bass is by Boom. That's recorded for TMO. That's all for this week, folks.
And as always, stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer and iPodObserver.com. And thanks for being our listeners. We really appreciate it. And we'll see you next week.